listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kurula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most, Nikki Kurula. We're going to jump right into this interview. This is the only time I'm looking right at the camera, but we're going to bring on actress and dancer extraordinaire, Thaisa Zweiter. Did I say it right?
Yes, you did.
Ooh, all right. So, you know, we were talking about this earlier, that you grew up in, you were born in Arizona, and then your family bailed and went to Brazil, the land of beauty and just capoeira and
samba, and bossa nova.
Right, the best. You know, I have to tell you, I went out to dinner a long time ago with the saxophonist for Dave Matthews Band, and you know, I told him, with all your travels, like, what's the one part of the world that you love the most? And he said, without even hesitating, he said, without a doubt, Brazil. And he said, man, bossa nova is like, took over my life. He's like, the food, the people, the rhythm of life, the music, everything. And ever since he told me that, I'm like, it's the number one place that I've always wanted to go visit. My parents have been there, but I have not. But tell me what life was like growing up in Brazil and how you got into dancing and all of that
stuff. Yes. I mean, Brazil is this place that is just naturally warm, and people are warm and friendly and welcoming. And, you know, you call your best friend's parents like your aunt and uncle because you're already part of the family, kind of thing. Right. So that kind of culture sticks to me till today, because I just like making friends anywhere I go. And I miss that a lot, you know, and that part, I feel like growing up there just like will shape you as a human being. So music really is amazing too. The samba and the bossa nova and the rhythms of Brazilian music are definitely something you don't find anywhere else. So,
Carnival too, like you have all these schools of drums. Like, I mean, it's just, it's just right on with everything, you know. It's flamboyant in cool ways. It's sexy in cool ways. It's like rhythmic and like soulful in cool ways. And then you have capoeira, which is like, you know, kind of like a martial art, but it's like created to be a dance.
Exactly. It's like a dance. It's all like all forms of like self-expression and art. And I feel like that culture is just so unique to Brazil. It's just, you don't find it anywhere else. And I love that.
So, and did you get into dancing at a young age? Were you kind of involved with?
Sort of. Okay. I mean, yes, I started dancing as a kid, but I really only started dancing ballet when I was like 10 or 11. Okay. And in the world of classical ballet, that's like, you're too old.
right.
I mean, it's real though. Like they say, like as a kid, you should start like at 6 or 7 at the latest, you know? So I started pretty late, like at 11, at 10, 11. But I danced with one of the best schools in Brasilia. That's where I grew up, like Brasilia, the capital of Brazil. I got the chance to be trained by Gisele Santoro, who is still an amazing maitre de ballet, as they call it in French, if I can even pronounce that correctly. Maitre de ballet.
There you go. I took French. I know a little bit.
Yeah, you know.
I won't scold you because my French is bad.
Yeah. We'll pretend that's correct.
Je suis désolé.
c'est désolé. Right. So yeah, like, that was an amazing experience. Like she was really known all over Europe, and she, not sure if she's still doing it, but like she hosted a world, like international kind of workshop of dance in Brasilia for many, many years, like during the summer, which is technically the winter in Brazil. But yeah, summer here. So I did a lot of those workshops and stuff.
We have a cool parallel because I read in your bio that you danced for the opera Aida. That's what I studied in school. We didn't talk about that when we first met, but
I actually sang
a lot of opera when I was growing up, and also that's what I studied in college. So opera was my jam. So like when I saw you Aida, I was like, oh my God, Verdi, you're like speaking my language. This is the stuff, you know?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. The opera stuff came when I moved here to the US, right? So I was no longer dancing as much. I was already trying to start focusing more on the acting aspect of my career, and then still dance just kind of snuck right.
It never leaves.
Arizona Opera. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah,
that was a really fun experience. We did the Phoenix Theater, and then we did a theater in Tucson, in Arizona.
That's amazing. Well, I don't know if you've seen the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion in downtown LA, but when I was a kid, I did 6 operas there. I sang with Placido Domingo. We did the, you know, stuff with the LA Master Chorale. And I was doing all this crazy stuff that I thought was normal. So, like, that to me was what I thought I was going to do. And then I shifted gears, as all artists do. Like, you kind of get, you know, immersed in something, and then you kind of pivot because you find your own sense of expression. And acting is yours. So tell me, like, what was the moment of zen for you that made you want to become an actress? Did it happen when you were a kid? Was it a theater class? Was it a play? What was that moment for you?
Like, it's interesting because I don't think I had one of those moments that were like, ta-da, light bulb, and I'm going to be an actor. It happened over the course of several little things, you know. I remember being third grade in school, and for Mother's Day, the school was putting together, like, you know, a bunch of activities with the students and bringing the parents and the moms to school. And one of the things was, like, they made a like kind of like a theater improv game where we were supposed to switch, where we would pretend to be the moms and the moms would pretend to be the kids, and we would, like, just improv with that. And I remember just going all out. Like, I put my mom's, like, suit jacket and, like, putting on her heels and, like, walking all wobbly, but, like, really going for it. So I remember just the love and the excitement that it felt being on stage and being there, like, just playing, and the creativity and the freedom of just, who cares? I'm just going to do whatever and express myself. Right. And then the next thing I remember, like, high school, and one of our teachers decided to put on a play that we would all write together as a collaborative effort of the students.
Cool. That's super cool.
And we wrote our own original play that was a mix of Alice in Wonderland.
Very cool.
With Wizard of Oz.
Awesome.
And a lot of the undertone and the dialogue was written with Beatles songs.
What? You're like speaking my language. These are all my favorites. Like, all in rock
and roll. This was like a crazy, like, we were just, again, just a bunch of kids just trying, like, how can we be creative and have a really fun story? So I played Dorothy in that one school play.
That's a good casting right there. Yeah, that's perfect.
It was fun. And it was fun. And then, so that was another moment where I was like, wow, like, I love dancing, but, like, also this thing is really fun. Right. This is also really exciting. And then I remember I stopped dancing and I was really just going to college and going to school for nutrition. And I was like, I don't know.
This isn't it.
I'm going to be a nutritionist. Like, sure, I care about being healthy and I want to help others be healthy. But I was like, nah, I miss being on stage. I miss expressing myself. And then by then I was definitely too old for ballet.
You're like, I definitely can't do this.
Like, there's no way I can do this professionally anymore if I'm going to really take it that seriously. And then I was like, okay, theater it is. Let me go to some theater classes. Let me sign up. Let me see if I love it. Let me see if I... And then the rest is history. I've been doing it ever since. So,
but you know what's so funny? Every artist kind of... they start thinking, I could never do this for a living. And then they do something. I mean, I was pre-med. I was pre-med in music. Yeah. And I remember walking into my freshman dorm, and it was all jazz musicians. So, like, I would be practicing arias, and I'd come home to, like, an 8-piece funk band in the living room. I'm like, this is way more fun. Like,
Why am I doing operas and arias?
Yeah, yeah. So it's like you make that pivot because you find that level of expression. But then it's like you realize you can make this as a living. You can make a career of this. And even if you go through obstacles and struggles, which every artist is going to go through, which is kind of what makes the journey, the wins, it makes the wins so much more worth it when you go through those. And you don't realize it until you start winning and getting some of those doors open and opportunities to kind of, you know, be welcomed into the industry. And but it's like you realize all of that is part of the journey, and it's so worth it. And it's way more worth it than doing something where you're sitting behind a desk hating or wondering what if. You know what I mean? It's like you got one life to live. You got to just, you know, pedal to the metal. Go for it. You know what I mean? It's so.
I hope whoever's listening to this like gets inspired. Like, if you're one of those people sitting there wondering, like, why am I not just chasing my dreams? Why am I not just going for the thing that actually makes me happy?
Absolutely,
go for it. It's worth it.
Yes. So you come to LA, and did you start taking acting classes in Arizona, or did you come over here and start?
I was still in Brazil, actually. I was still in college for nutrition.
Wow.
But one of my semesters, I was like, I'm going to take one less nutrition class and let me sign up to this like one musical theater like thing, like music thing. And so I signed up for that. And then I was like, okay, this is fun. And then the next semester, I was like, let me see what actual like classes, studios in Brasilia there were that were just outside of college that I could take it more seriously, right? And then I was like, okay. And then I found a studio that did mostly musical theater, and they at the end of the year they would put on a whole performance in the biggest theater in Brasilia. And then I signed up and I did the class, and like I would have singing classes in the weeks, and then on the weekends we would do the rehearsals and acting and like dance rehearsals and stuff. And we did Beauty and the Beast by the end of the year.
That's nice.
And that was an amazing musical. And that was my first musical. And obviously I was ensemble. I had never sang before. I didn't know what I was doing. I'm still not necessarily the best singer out there.
You know what? You still got time.
Right? That's true. But yeah, like that was an amazing experience, because then I was like, oh wow, like this is it. Like, again, this is my calling. And then that's when I moved to the U.S. And my family, I'm like, I'm going to go and I'm going to try some classes, see what happens. And then maybe I'll come back. And, you know, and then they're like, okay, yeah, we'll see you in 6 months. And I was like, cool. See you in 6 months. I'll be back.
Let's see how that works out. 6 months. Yeah, that's plenty of time. I'll make it by then.
6 months later. Well, not even that. For them, they thought I was just going to stay here for 6 months to just take some courses and come back to Brazil.
Right.
And in my mind, I was like, no, I'm going to move to LA eventually, right? Like, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to go all the way. And I don't think any of them even knew. And I don't know if maybe I knew deep down that this is like, okay, no, I'm just really going to go all the way. And I just didn't have the guts to say it. Or I didn't know how to express that.
Yeah.
You know, your parents only wish you the best. And they're like, they don't want you to see you struggle and fail. So for me to have to tell them, like, I'm like, oh, I'm just going to try this acting thing. And then they're like, wait, what?
Wait a minute.
how do you say that? You know, that was not in the, you're not going to finish your bachelor's degree in nutrition.
They want to see you happy. Yeah, of course. Well, I mean,
yeah.
You know what? It's like one of those things where you have to make that, it's a crossroads. It's like you realize I need to do this and do the things that are going to feed that experience more than fulfilling something else. Sometimes it happens, and most successful people do that. It's like they make that pivot, and then they throw themselves in it, and you start to learn like how much more you have to learn to get to be good at this thing. Because at the end of the day, we're all artists, and we want to be able to contribute. And the only way you can really contribute is if you learn technique, and you learn the base, and you get a foundation, and then you learn how to express and throw a lot of that out the window so that you can, become an artist and yeah. do the thing. You know what I mean? So
learn the rules so that you can break the rules.
Right. And but, I always have to tell you, I always admire people that move to Los Angeles to pursue this craft because I'll tell you, 99% of the people out there don't have the courage to do that. And it's also commendable. I'm from here. So like I was in the business singing and doing crazy stuff as a kid, just, you know, like already in the business. When I know people changed their lives, packed up their cars or got on a plane and flew out here or drove out here to completely create a whole new life, it's like such a commendable choice. And I tip my hat to you, you know, because it's like one of those things. It takes so much courage and bravery just to go after this. You know, if you were from here, it takes that courage. But the fact that you leave your family and friends and the things that you know to go after this dream. And
but it's so uncertain.
So uncertain. And so I want to ask you, like being from here, I want to know what was that experience like when you first came here and now you've seen LA and kind of like give me the nitty gritty. Like, tell me what it was like. Because you grew up in Brazil. You were born in Arizona. You come to LA. It's a very different.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I first got back to the U.S., I went back to Arizona, funny enough. And I was living with my mom there. So that was an easier transition. Right. Like I still had the familiarity of family and having that support system in a way. Mm-hmm. Then when I moved to LA, it was like all out the window.
Right.
Really, really. Right. So I literally packed a U-Haul truck and my mom helped me get here with the U-Haul truck and then helped me unload my stuff into this little apartment that I was renting a room out of somebody's house, you know, out of this little apartment. And yeah, that I feel like for me, it was almost just like, when you just don't know, you just don't know, so you don't fear it.
Right.
I think because I was just so clueless.
you're open too. It's like,
it's so true.
To the experience that you're like, well, I don't know what's out there. I don't know how bad it's going to be or how good it's going to be. Yep. So I'm open. You know, it's like,
it was just enough. Like, I just did just enough due diligence in researching the people I was going to live with, some of the locations, asking people that I had heard, like had been to LA and that knew the neighborhoods and stuff like that, that I'm like, okay, I think this is a safe area. And I think these are safe people. Let me see. Like, but it was like on Craigslist that I found the apartment and I found these people and, and so how many things could have gone wrong, you know, with all of the situation. But I think it was just enough due diligence for me to like do the right things in the right way. And also just enough gutsiness to be like, I'll figure it out. We'll see what happens.
That's awesome. See, that's the part that's pretty awesome because it's not easy to do that. And you did it without family and you did it on your own. And you're in a part of the, you know, like LA is a weird Rubik's Cube of a city because, you know, you take downtown and you have all these bougie hotels. You make one wrong left and one wrong right and you're in Skid Row. You know what I mean? And it's like a lot of parts of LA have these different vibes and you kind of figure it out once you're here and you kind of like make friends or see shows or see plays or whatever you're doing. But you realize there's so much here. There's so much art. Yeah. There's so much music. There's so much stuff going on that person next to you sitting, getting a coffee could be writing the next, you know, great screenplay or, you know, sculpting some great art piece or making a film or making a record. You don't know. And that's what makes this city so great because there's so many dreamers in the city and it's like everybody's here and then you figure out what neighborhoods to hang out in and kind of like who to kind of gravitate towards. So tell me what that was like for you because you've been doing some pretty cool stuff in the acting world, which we'll talk about. But you first have to get that like common ground of like getting a living and a neighborhood situation where you feel like this place can be a home, you know?
Yeah. And for me, a lot of it was just figuring it out day by day. I didn't have a job when I moved here. So first thing I was like, I got to find a job.
Right.
And what do I do to make money to survive? And I think my first few years were a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of just doing research and going to all the acting classes I could find online and like doing so much research and asking people that had been, I met at those acting classes being like, okay, what's the next class I should be taking? And auditing. I think I was like auditing a lot of the classes at first to then even decide like, what class do I want to take? And I still took some classes that looking back, I'm like, yeah, that was not a good class, but I just didn't know any better.
There's a hustle. There's part of it is like figuring out what the hustle is and who the hustlers are. And also the things where you find like really good content and things you can learn from.
Yep.
I'm sure you learned Uta Hagen, a respect for acting, and Meisner.
Meisner.
Like, tell me the technique that I think Meisner is what I read in your bio.
Tell me why
you respond to it so much.
And well, Meisner was actually a discovery in Arizona still before I moved to LA.
Wow.
And I took I did the 2-year Meisner like technique course that is talked about, like that you do a 2-year course, and I follow the whole program for 2 years. So and for me, again, that was like my very first like real acting technique and acting experience of like what we were talking about, like you got to learn the rules and you got to learn the basics and you really got to understand that so then you can work on that craft that it is acting before you can go and throw it out the window and do whatever you want.
Right? Meisner does a lot of method, right? He's doing a lot of method acting.
Yeah, I mean, if you really think of all of these, like Uta Hagen and Meisner, and then even the more contemporary, it's all coming from method and Stanislavski. It's just variations from it. So like Meisner is like, well, being truthful, but in the imaginary circumstances.
Right.
So it's taking a little bit of your method of like living fully in the reality of what it is, but creating an imaginary circumstance. You don't have to have had like somebody die in your life to imagine what it is to lose something. So connecting to any sort of loss to then create that parallel into the imaginary circumstances of the character in the story. But they all drive ultimately from a little bit of the method acting.
Right.
And then, from there, and then in LA, I ended up discovering other studios and places that I learned. And I just try to grab a little bit of everything that I could, that worked for me. Cause I think also that's what happens when you become more experienced in your acting is that you don't have to do one specific technique and you don't have to do one specific method of acting. Just grab what works for you from every single person, from every single mentor and teacher, and build yourself your toolbox of what really works for you.
I love that.
I feel like that's what I've been doing over the years.
Now tell me what the audition,
my own little way.
The audition process is another learning curve that just, first of all, it sucks. And it's such a silly way to dictate like how people can make or break careers. But tell me what that process was like for you, because it is a learning curve of learning curves.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Let me tell you. Oh, God. and they really say, what they really say is true is like when they say, you know, you could be an amazing actor and a terrible auditioner.
Yes.
Right? And I feel like I was in that category for a while where I was getting really good with my acting and my auditioning skills and technique was not getting there, not translating the same way. And for me, I think my biggest breakthrough was understanding that it's not necessarily just the audition technique itself, is also camera technique.
Right.
A lot of acting classes that I had taken in the beginning were so much just theater based, right? Where you're in a classroom setting where all the students are sitting, and then you go up on the stage or in front of the classroom and you do your exercises. And it's totally different when you're doing a class that's specifically done in front of a camera. And you're acting for the camera. Like if you want to be a film and TV actor, that's a technique and that's something that must be learned. And that goes then hand in hand, especially now with self-tapes, where your audition is on tape. So learning that is a game changer. And I think it's...
Do you think that's one of the cool things, though? It's like the self-tapes help the audition process because you have your choice of what take you can use versus being in the room. You're in a room where people mostly don't care. Let's be honest. And they've seen 50. No, I
wouldn't say.
I'll be honest. Like, and most people that I've done auditions like for music or whatever. Most of them, it's crazy that they're the ones that are qualified because they've never really taken an acting class. They've never taken a music class. They if the tides were turned, and you saw that they could not do this, it would be kind of mortifying to know that they're in control of the decision of you getting the gig or not, which I think is the ridiculous part of the process, because I think every person that is casting should know how to audition, should know how to act, should know the craft on that level, because it adds to their level of judgment, you know?
True. I feel like, I don't know, like I agree to a point, because also it's like, that's why they're a casting director and that's why they're not an actor. Like that's, there's also specific skills and specific things that as a casting director, I would not be able to do. And like, maybe my judgment could be off for certain things. And because they have the experience and they understand what they're looking for. And like, it's like being a director. Like if you have a certain eye and you can see the vision, you know, you don't necessarily have to be an actor. I don't know. Like
casting director than most casting directors. I think you know the craft. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is sometimes it's political. Sometimes people are in situations. I'm just saying, like,
that exists in all levels. It's crazy. It should Hollywood never. And technically the actor is at the very bottom of the totem pole of decision making, of power, of any of that. So,
but yet they are the storytellers. They are the players in the game, which is they're let's be honest, they're one of the most important parts of the story besides the director. You know what I mean? It's like, those are like two of the biggest. It's kind of like a coach and a player on a team. I mean, it's like that is the same parallel. And yeah, you have all these people pulling strings and kind of seeing like, you know, how things are going to work or how directors, who they want or how it a look, whatever it is that it makes, you know, these decisions. And then you see a director like Martin Scorsese, who I literally just read that he rewrote the screenplay for his latest movie because he felt like it was telling more of the story of the white man in comparison to the Native Americans that, you know.
My necklace.
Oh, no, that's not good.
My necklace fell apart. Okay.
We'll see, it's the force of the force. Right. Just kidding. No, you know, it's a magic trick. You should be part magician, you know. No, but I mean, it's like it comes down.
He rewrote it, yeah.
He rewrote it because it's like he felt like the art wasn't expressing enough of the story of the Native American tribes that this particular story was, you know, taking place between, you know, white settlers and Native Americans who discovered oil on their land. And then you see that the white settlers kind of start taking over the Native Americans. And he was telling more of this story from that white settler perspective. And he's like, no, this is not the story. So he rewrote it. And it's like, that's a storyteller. That's a director that knows that this is the art of storytelling and making movies. That's why he's Martin Scorsese. So I feel like the actor plays a significant role. And sometimes that relevance is not properly placed on actors and actresses like yourself, because you're trying to just get in the door and like create an opportunity to be seen and heard to express these stories so that people can notice what you're doing. So the game, I have a lot of that part. Weird. It's a weird part of the journey that I feel like is unnecessary, but I guess you have to go through it to kind of maneuver and figure it out. But you have done some really cool things. You were in one of my favorite news shows in the last like 3 years that I've seen, The Offer. You were more. Who were you in The Offer again? Who was the character?
So the character's name is Gino's wife. Right. I didn't have an actual character name. However, I got to cry. It's in a funeral scene.
Right.
I'm the wife of the one character that dies. I don't know. I don't want to spoil it for people who have not seen it yet. One of the characters dies and I'm the wife, and you see me at the funeral crying. And the big importance of that scene and why I was cast in that, and the reason why they were like, we need somebody who cries. And I'm like, I can cry on cue. And literally that was my tape. Like that the whole tape was me improvising at the wake, at the funeral, and just saying hi to people and the visitors, like, do you call them visitors in English? How do you call it in English?
I guess you could say that. Yeah, mourners.
Yeah, the other family and friends, and improvising, just saying, oh, thank you for coming, and improvising little chit chat. Like, yeah, he was an amazing man, and thank you, blah, blah, blah. But like, then I was crying the whole time, and that was my audition.
That's crazy. That's a tough
one. And I got to meet Giovanni Ribisi and Miles Teller.
Amazing.
And yeah, and I remember the being on set and the director and the showrunner really just discussing the importance of what that scene was, and discussing of like, okay, why did we add this to the script? Because that's another thing. Like, these scripts go through so many revisions. They really only keep the things that make a difference for the storytelling, right? Like, you're talking about the rewrites and all of that, like Martin Scorsese was doing. They do that in every single movie and TV show, where they're only keeping the most important things to be able to, what's the story? What is the point they're trying to make with this? And in that case, with that scene, they really needed to show the heart of the family members being so broken down by that. That loss, that in the opposite side, you see Miles Teller's character just being like, well, I'm here for business, and let's talk business. And how do they deal with that? Like, Miles Teller's character having to be there watching everything that's happening and the loss that all these people are going through while he has to go and talk business.
Right.
You know, and
that had to be a pinch me moment too, because here you are, you grew up in Brazil, grew up in Arizona for a little bit, coming to LA, and now you're on set with Miles Teller, Giovanni Ribisi, and like making this cool story about the making of The Godfather. Yes. Terrific series.
Terrific series.
You also you were Maureen in Pam and Tommy, was that right?
Yes, yes.
That's Maureen. Another cool series.
And it's very cool series.
You're doing some pretty cool pinch me moments, like,
Yeah, and
I know you play it cool, but I mean, honestly, as an artist, it's like, you know, it's all peaks and valleys. And when you have those peaks, you're like, oh my God, here I am doing the thing. It's got to feel kind of justified and vindicated. You have to feel a little vindication. So tell me what that feeling was like for you.
And I think that's exactly what you just said. It's just that pinch me moment of like, I'm actually on set and I'm doing this, like the thing that I've been working so hard towards.
Right.
For Pam and Tommy, I just remember being on set, and as soon as I get off the makeup and hair trailer, and I'm going back to my trailer to get changed and, you know, sign contracts, all the stuff that we do. And I'm walking right by, and oh goodness, blanking names. Tommy.
I know you're talking. I can't remember his name. I'm terrible with names.
Why am I blanking right now? I just remember, like, I'm just walking by, and then he's like, hey, good morning. And I'm like, oh, hi, good morning. And then I like, oh shit, that's him.
You're like, oh, it's the star of the thing I'm doing. Oh,
like, goodness. That's actually him, and he just said good morning to me. And he's also a huge Avengers and in the Marvel world.
That's right.
Like,
that's
what?
Right. Well, it's also like you're in the company of people doing the thing, and it's just like, that's what makes you feel like, okay, this is why I'm here. This is like one of those moments of why you're here. I want to showcase your reel real quick. We're going to play Thaisa's reel. This is Thaisa Zweiter's actor reel.
So we don't have to deal with that right now. Hold on one second. Maureen?
Yeah?
Is this the only page?
Yes. Why?
I gotta call you back.
I know I look green, Miss Jones, but trust me when I tell you, I will do whatever it takes to get what I want. I will wear that tight skirt and flirt and smile. Men are really easily manipulated, aren't they? Especially by a young, naive girl who just needs to be shown the ways of the world by a big, strong man. Trust me, Susanna, I'll get that story.
How do they pick the couples?
It's all based on compatibility tests, you know, science.
Like online quizzes.
We're still getting married today, right?
What's the rush?
I can't end up like my sister. A sad, lonely, middle-aged woman.
I'm 32.
I'm fine, really. I just want to get married.
The difference between my daughter having a normal scholastic career, she got a pretty good chance. Wait, what?
You have a heart.
Yeah, well, I have a daughter, so.
You're usually a dick to everybody.
Well, maybe I have to be with you guys before I forget. The therapist. I reviewed the notes. She said something about retrograde.
Yeah, but what does that have to do with anything?
I don't know.
What, do you think there's a pattern?
Maybe.
Always hiding your true desires behind the wills of the gods. It will no longer stand.
You cannot kill me. You do not have the power.
That is true. But I can kill the only thing of purity you possess.
Ilya? You lie.
So be it. Thei tus cotus que tu fotos.
No!
Thank you, sister.
Wow. Good stuff. Good stuff going on there. So yeah. A lot of cool things you were doing. And you know what? Yeah. You have some very poignant little lines, little zingers, where you wear those lines. You're like, boom. That's so much of it. It's like, even if you have like these little bit lines, you make them count. And that's what like people, that's how people notice you, you know? So tell me when you're doing these roles, how you're able to kind of like switch gears so quickly, because I'm sure like you're real, you're crying in one scene and the next scene you have to be an angry or a possessed woman or a jealous girlfriend or whatever it is. Tell me how you're able to kind of like go through the motions and kind of capture those emotions as an actress in every scene and every situation.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of it is the preparation that took all those years, right? So it's all that training. It's all of the knowledge, again, that I started putting into my little toolbox of techniques and then being able to be like, okay, what's this one about? Like, what's this character about? Like, how do I connect to this part of myself that tells this story?
Right.
And a lot of it is text interpretation. A lot of it is understanding storytelling so that you know exactly, okay, what is my job as the actor in this moment as this character for the scene? If you really understand how to break the script down and understand how to do that homework in a way, then you just get to the lines and it's like, okay, like now I understand the importance of this line and why it has to be said with this kind of gravitas, like you were saying.
Right.
Or is this the punchline or is this the setup for the joke and somebody else is throwing in the punchline? Once you understand all of that structure, and that comes from all of those years of training, really.
Right. But go ahead.
I was just going to say, and like for me, I feel like once you're just in the groove and like you're busy and you're going from one role to the next and one audition to the next, it's like, it's a lot of meditation.
Yes.
A lot of centering yourself, knowing thyself.
Right. Well, and it's also like these auditions are so short. They give you these one sheet, parts of the screenplay, and you have to kind of make up what's going to happen if you don't even know sometimes.
Sometimes you don't have the full script and you just got to, and understanding again, that storytelling and understanding where could this fit in the grand scheme of the story that they're telling. And especially if it's a brand new show. So for Pam and Tommy, there was no season one for me to watch to figure out, like, what's the tone? Is this going to be funnier? Is it going to be more dramatic? Like, where are they going with it? The Offer also no clue where, which way they're gearing towards more, right, like more dramatic or more not. Like, so for that, it's really relying on your training and being like, okay, well, how can I make this work maybe two different ways so that I can send two takes of my audition?
That's smart. Like two, and they'll see,
and they'll see that, okay, well, she could take direction, whichever way we go with her on the day of set, she'll get it.
Are there roles that you prefer to sink your teeth into that are maybe a little bit more kind of controversial, or maybe it's like the character has so many different faces that, is that something that like you're drawn to, or is it kind of like you want just to tell the story and be able to just be a character that is able to emote in a way that's direct, or do you like the complexities of kind of mixed emotions in a character?
I feel like every actor would prefer the latter, like the more complex, right? Like the more intriguing character, the one that has multiple layers of, are they hiding something? Right. What else has happened to them? Are they angry because of this or that? Or like, is it because they're sad about something else? Like the multitude of layers, I think that's what intrigues most actors. And those are definitely the characters that I would like to play.
That's awesome. Sure. That makes sense. And you are currently funding or helping to gather some funds for a new short film. Let's talk about that. Tell me about this new short film project. And you've got a GoFundMe page. We're going to add that link to your bio on the Wake Up Hollywood page. But tell us a little bit about this short film project, and we'll play a little trailer about it.
Yes. So it's short film, right? So ideally, we're going to eventually get into making it as a feature film or as a TV series. This would be the teaser to the bigger project, right? It is about four friends coming home together after the wake of one of their best friends, the one that got them together. And it's a dark comedy. I don't want to give a lot of spoilers.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay.
It's a short film. It's such a short little that everything happens like in a blur. Cool. Everything is just thrown at you, like as the audience member, you're like, oh wait, this happened. Oh wait, and that happened. And wait, this also happened. And it's about how the four of them all get together to try to figure out how are they going to overcome all of those obstacles that just get thrown at them.
That's cool. And you've got some funding coming together, but let's play this trailer in support of this new short film project.
Oh, not quite a trailer. It's a calling for action, for funding, and a little bit of an explanation about what the short is and an introduction of the characters.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm J.R. Russell.
Hey, everyone. My name is Thaisa, and I'm playing Megan Ortiz.
Hi, my name is Sandy, and I'm playing Amanda Bailey.
Hi, my name is Julia. I'll be playing Danica Taylor in Expecting Friends.
I think in L.A., our families a lot of times are so far away that what we have is we have those friends. And we have Friendsgiving, and we get together over holidays and things like that. You really get a sense of like, hey, this is your family that you created. And so bringing that together, especially in this project, that's the type of vibe, the feel, is that these friends that have been through so much, that are still going through so much, and that have so much in their future. That, for me, it's just so powerful, and I really wanted to explore that.
There are so many different topics that we bring into conversation with the project. I mean, it is a comedy. But still, like, we were talking about, you know, three different women and friendship between three different women and what a family even looks like. And for us in this movie, our friendship is our family. So we really like that.
It's a story about friends coming together, and it's chaotic, which life is. And it's about going through a lot of stuff and leaning on your friends to pull you through.
Mm-hmm. It represents family. I love shows and movies about like what's gonna happen next, like a dark comedy kind of thing where we can get all the characters together in the end. Especially, I'm a crier, so I like things that could make me cry like that.
And so you think this project will make you cry?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe like while I'm on set, maybe while I'm watching it. We'll see.
Okay, guys, thank you so much for watching, and we really want to get this accomplished, and we need your help to do it. So please donate, because friends donate together.
Nice.
And you're watching Disney Channel.
Donate friends together. Friends donate together. Friends together donate.
No, it's just friends donate together.
I know.
All right, go.
I was pulling a Julia. I'm just wondering which word behind that. Friends donate. Jesus!
Yeah, okay.
Friends donate together.
Thank you for coming along this journey with us. We're really excited to be making this project, and we can't wait to show it to you. Friends donate together.
Just like that.
Just like
okay. Thank you so much for watching. If you like what you saw, or even if you hated it, please feel free to donate or share or GoFundMe. Please help me. I'm poor. Friends donate together. That's a wrap.
Very cool. You guys just have a good energy together. So it's very cool that you're doing this grassroots marketing. That's how you get things going. What I also love and respect, it's like, I'm a big mover and shaker. And it's like, I think when the industry doesn't create opportunities for you, you have to create opportunities for yourself. And I think it's amazing. I think it's amazing that you guys are doing this and kind of like figuring it out, making something happen, making something, being creative in how you raise the funds, because that's how you start a movement. So tell me what was the catalyst to get this going, and what was the thing that made you want to make this?
Well, this really started with us trying to stay creative and do something because the strike is happening.
Right.
And, you know, writers are on strike and the actors union is on strike. So there's not a lot happening with the big studios, and the TV shows and films are all paused. And the short film agreement is technically allowed throughout the strike. So you can still work on a short film.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
So through the union, we're actually using the union contract. We're not breaking any rules. We're not scabbing because the short film agreement is still allowed. So that's what we decided to do. I was like, okay, what is technically allowed right now? What can we still do to stay creative? And then the idea came, and then our co-producer and writer, J.R. Russell, was the one who wrote the script. And then from there, we kept going. And now we have an amazing director attached to the project. He has an amazing vision for it, which we're really, really excited. We have an amazing cinematographer attached.
That's awesome.
He's worked on huge, big streamers that we should not name because of the strike. Oh, my God. I talked about so many projects.
That's all right. That's good.
I don't even know if it was okay to talk about.
It's guerrilla style. That's what I like. It's like,
The
trenches make something when there's...
And the cinematographer, has worked for all these big streamers and was working for a big TV show right before the strike happened. And as soon as the strike ends, he'll probably go back to filming that TV show. So,
you gotta strike while the iron's hot.
The strike, in a way, has helped us to get amazing quality crew members and talented storytellers that are they like the idea. They want to tell and share the story with everybody else. And if it wasn't for the strike, we wouldn't be able to get this done. So,
well, it's an amazing pivot too. It's like, you know, the industry's giving you lemons, and it's like, let's make lemonade.
Let's make lemonade out of it.
So, I mean, that's how you make things happen. How you get things noticed and moving. So, I wish you guys so much luck, and it's exciting. When do you think you're going to shoot it? When do you think it's going to kind of take place? Do you have an idea of like when it's going to start?
Yes. So we're in this pre-production phase. We're scouting locations. We're doing rehearsals and looking out the rentals for equipment and getting the production insurance and all of the permits that we need to be able to shoot properly. So all of that is happening, and shoot should be in October, mid-October.
That's exciting. That's so close. I love it.
Really, really close.
You're moving and shaking on like crazy levels. That's awesome.
Yes. And obviously, like, you know, our director has submitted to many, his previous projects have gone through so many big festivals and won awards in a lot of festivals. So that's the idea with this one, is for us to get it to all the big festivals.
Well, there's a great, I have an animated short that I submitted to an amazing festival in Portugal, and you already speak the language, so you know what I mean.
I'll be in Lisbon.
Send you the information, because it's an amazing festival, and you kind of rub shoulders with a lot of people that sometimes you don't have access to here. So it's just, and everybody's in this little beach town in the south of Portugal, and it's just amazing. So you'll have to submit it there for sure.
Definitely. Please send me the information.
Absolutely. But where can people find you if they want to ask you to be a part of their future film projects, plays, commercials? Yes. You've done a ton of commercials. I saw a bunch of them.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yeah. Cool. Toyota. Chevron. God. Chevron. Yeah. M. Taylor. Google Maps. I've done so many. Cool. And there's another TV show that I'm in that I shouldn't talk about. I shouldn't say it. But if people want to keep up with my IMDb, you can find me just my first name and last name. There's going to be a new credit up there because
I love it. That's awesome. That's exciting. Soon. You can't give us, is there something that you can tease us with what it's going to be about, or?
I can't say anything. I'm not only I'm on under an NDA, but I'm also under the strike, and we should not be promoting any of the new projects. So I should not talk about it. But again, it's going to be up on IMDb eventually in the next few weeks to a month or two at the most.
Let's talk a little bit about the strike, because this is an important part of what's happening in the industry right now. It's like SAG and the Writers Guild, they're both striking. They kind of started striking around the same time, and I think the Writers Guild was earlier, about 2 months. But tell me, like, how this strike has kind of, affected how the relationships have been between studios and actors and writers, and how writers and actors are kind of coming together. Like, tell me what that kind of alliance has been like for you.
I think it's a really powerful moment for the writers and for the actors. I mean, the writers obviously are fighting a huge thing with AI, just as much as the actors are. AI could literally wipe out work opportunities and a way of making a living as an actor and as a writer right now. So that's one of the biggest concerns that everybody's talking about. But so is every little other aspect of our contracts that we're trying to negotiate.
The streaming part is like the streamings
and the residuals. Yep. It's not that we're asking for money that wasn't already there. We're not asking them to suddenly give us a slice of the pie that wasn't already negotiated in the past. It's just, in the last negotiations, they made it seem like, well, nobody really knows if streamers are going to make any money and if streaming is even going to become something that the audience will utilize as a way of consuming content. And as we know now, that's 90% of how people consume content nowadays is through the streaming services, is through the internet, subscription-based kind of studio thing. So nobody's watching open channels anymore as much as they did. So the fact that somebody can watch a TV show that was on an open channel, like channel whatever, but instead of watching it on Thursday night when the show actually airs on the 8 p.m. slot, and they choose to watch it on the streaming service on Saturday morning instead, we're getting way less money on residuals because the public is choosing to watch it on Saturday morning in the streaming service versus watching it live when it aired on the open channel service.
Right.
And it shouldn't make a difference.
It shouldn't make
how people are consuming the content.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? This is what I really respect. It's like
the residual writers, amount should be the same.
And the writers and actors, they're striking in a way that I wish the musicians union. There's no musicians real union.
There's no musician
union. That's not like Screen Actors Guild, not like the Writers Guild. And it drives me crazy because I wish there was a union in the music industry, because what really is happening is they've seen what has happened in the music industry and they're like, this can't happen in the film world. And they're absolutely right. So like the thing that they're actually kind of fighting for is justified. It's not asking for too much, and it affects 85% of the actors and the 85% of the writers who are not the mainstream and the biggest stars. So it's such a good cause, and it's so crazy that the suits, as I love to call them,
the suits,
they're just dilly-dallying on this negotiation. Yeah. It's like corporate greed at its worst, you know. It's like
at its worst.
It drives me crazy because it's like I'm very candid on this show and in a lot of things that I talk about. Yeah. And it's like you have these people that they're not actors, they're not writers, they're not creatives. And yet they're making so much money on the backs of creators.
Of the art.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, they don't really do much. Like they are the sellers or the providers of content being viewed, but that's changing the game with streaming. I mean, you create a new streaming platform that doesn't need a network, you eliminate them. You know what I mean? So it's crazy that they're holding on to such power and corporate greed in the way they are, because what would any of these film houses be without films and creators? They would just be buildings. They'd be empty buildings. So continue the fight, because you guys are all doing something wonderful. I love that you're creating stuff in a wonderful way to pivot this strike and kind of like still stay active in the world of acting and making content. And if people want to find you, where can people find you online?
Yes. My Instagram is, again, just my first name and last name, Thaisa Zweiter.
Spell it out, because people
on
are
Instagram. So it's TAISSAZVEITER.
Wonderful. Yes, Thaisa, you've been a wonderful guest. The reason I started this show is to interview artists like yourself. Like, we have artists come on, and then 9 or 10 months later, we have them back on. And I would love to showcase your short film. That's what this platform is all about. We've had Oscar winners on this show. We've had Grammy winners. We've had new artists. And they all are on back to back every week, because that's what this world is. It's like, we're all creatives. This is what the world needs more of, is showcasing a spotlight on artists like yourself. So thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. We're going to have you back. All right.
Thank you for having me. Yes. Can't wait.
On behalf of Thaisa, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in. Peace and love, and take care of yourselves. Take care of each other.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.